Hello, everyone. Welcome to the KJ Lee Experience. My name is KJ Lee, and I'll be your host. The goal of the show is to uncover the valuable life lessons taught throughout sports. We'll be introducing you to some of the highest performing professionals in the world today, and we'll have them share their unique experiences about how they use sports to see the bigger picture, and we'll explain how you can use sports to win in life. I hope you enjoy. This man is a child of two Nigerian immigrants. He was a top 100 basketball recruit coming out of high school. And not only did he graduate Harvard University, he also gave a commencement speech at his graduation. I would like to introduce you guys to Chris Egge. Chris, thank you for joining us here today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate the intro.
So the reason why I wanted to interview you, the reason why I reached out to you is because we both graduated the same year, 2018. We both went to school in Massachusetts. You went to Harvard. I went to Stonehill. Shout out to Stonehill. Shout out to Harvard. But I feel like you are light years ahead of me. You, like I said, you went to Harvard, you gave the commencement speech at Harvard, you're now at Goldman Sachs. I did a little bit of research to see some of the people that have given the commencement speeches at Harvard on YouTube. I saw Oprah Winfrey, Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook. Mm-hmm. These are all tremendous people that have accomplished a lot. My first question to you is, why did you feel the need to give a commencement speech at your graduation?
Yeah, no, so that story is actually interesting. The year before, one of my best friends on the basketball team, Zena, mm-hmm. was graduating, also my captain, Siani, and we had a few of our guys graduating. So I stayed on campus to attend graduation. It's the first time I've ever seen Harvard's graduation. Mm-hmm. And, I went to see some of the student speeches that were given at graduation. And this student, Jonathan Roberts, he gave this speech about, and like the theme of the speech was like this idea of like back in my day. And basically he's talking about how when his dad told stories about like back in the day, he would talk about how much rougher it was and like how one day he hopes we can build a world where like he can have the same experience, where basically his kids living in a better world and that allows him to be like, back in my day it was tougher. Gotcha. So it's like, I really enjoyed that speech and just like the way he gave it, the topic, you know, left me thinking afterwards. And I'm like, okay, when I graduate, it'd be cool if I could do that and like have a message to share. And you know, come senior year, the opportunity came to kind of speak, and I felt like I had a message I wanted to share with people at Harvard, with the next generation of kids who are coming up, and then with the parents who are in attendance.
Gotcha. So you just told them you wanted to give a speech, and they were like, okay.
No, so there's a competition every year that basically you submit an application. So you write up the speech, you send it in. Mm-hmm. I think a few, like 100, maybe more students apply. And then they just go through the speeches, depending on if they like it or not, you get invited to do like an in-person audition, kind of like American Idol style.
Wow.
And yeah, so you get up there and you like give your speech. And you know, I was lucky, they liked mine and you know, ended up getting chosen. And then from there it's like, you know, they kind of give you speech coaches and they kind of help you prep.
Really?
Yeah.
So how far in advance did you know that you were speaking at graduation?
Ooh, it was maybe a month and a half in advance I knew I was speaking, and it was, okay. You know, I was a little bit anxious because I felt like, okay, let me get out the way, like, let me, you know, I've been working on this thing I want to share with people, but, mm-hmm. you know, it was a super special experience.
So the last month of school, while everyone is out there enjoying themselves, uh-huh. enjoying the last days of college, you were practicing your speech.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting balance, right, because in particular, like, the last, like, senior week on campus, right, where mm-hmm. everybody's just kind of, you know, it's your last week on campus, just having time, fun time with your friends. You know, we had rehearsals, you know, in the morning and, you know, during the afternoon. So I remember there's like this activity day where we like all go out to the football field and like all the seniors like do like this Olympiad type thing.
Yeah.
Tug of war, all that. And we had speech rehearsal.
Wow.
So I was doing that. And, you know, obviously there's trade-offs and I'm glad for the experience I had. But just like, you know, a little bit of sacrifice there.
Mm-hmm. No, that's...
But today I stand before you as the proud grandson of a Nigerian carpenter, the child of two Nigerian immigrants, and a graduate of one of the greatest institutions in the world. Proof that while we all have dreams, some of us have to travel farther to achieve them, both figuratively and literally. My wish is that with our help, more dreams can be converted into reality. That is a calling that the class of 2018 must answer. A dual mandate to do well and to do good. To wake up, look around, and help those whose climb is stifled by the burdens of oppression. your future, my future, and the future of our society depends on us creating, supporting, and investing in the dreams that the next generation can live up to and build upon. It depends on us looking one another in the eye and telling one another to continue to strive for more, to keep growing, and to never, ever stop climbing. Because the next generation is watching, looking up at us, eyes wide, sparkling, and full of joy, as we yell out, higher, higher, and higher.
Congratulations on that.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate
so, earlier this summer in June, I read a book by Robert Greene. Do you know Robert Greene?
Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, so the book was titled Mastery, and the whole idea of the book was that in order to find true fulfillment in life, you need to choose a career path that aligns with your passion.
Yeah.
So, he said that in order to reach the highest level of his career, you need to go through certain phases. So the first phase is the apprentice phase, that's when you're like an intern.
Yeah.
The second phase is the creative phase, that's when you first start putting your work out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the final phase is the mastery phase, that's when you're at the top of your craft.
Yeah.
So there's a book, there's a quote from this book that I want to share with you real quick.
Yeah.
So it says, many of those who succeed in life have had the experience in their youth of having mastered some skill, a sport or game, a musical instrument, foreign language, and so on. Buried in their minds is the sensation of overcoming their frustrations and entering the cycle of accelerated returns. In moments of doubt in the present, the memory of the past experience rises to the surface. Filled with trust, in the process they trudge on well past the point in which others slow down or quit. So my question to you is, let's look back to your youth.
Mm-hmm.
Was there something that you mastered, a sport or game, that in times of doubt now, you could just look back and be like, oh, I was able to do that, so this is nothing?
Yeah, no, I think there's a few things. I think one is, honestly, funny, you know, like, basketball is a huge part of my life. But, like, before basketball, I was, like, a huge geek. You know, so, like, I remember one of my greatest accomplishments in life. And, honestly, like, I wore 24 in college. It's my mom's birthday, my dad. My mom born on December 24th. My dad born on September 24th.
Oh, wow.
So everybody is like, okay, when people ask me why I wear 24, I say it's because of my parents' birthdays.
Not Kobe.
I was before Kobe. I was before Kobe. But the real reason I wore 24 is because in fifth grade, there's like a national math competition,
okay,
and I came 24.
Okay.
And that was like a huge point of pride for me. So like math and like numbers was something that always was like a point of like something like I felt super comfortable with. And that was just like practice. And like eventually, like I felt like that kind of mastery. And then when it came to basketball, you know, like I applied that same type of mentality of like, okay, like how do I, it's like hard work and that grind and, you know, learning to kind of work through the rough patches. Because like when I first started playing basketball, I was absolutely terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I went to a practice and like midway through like the warm up drill, you know how like sometimes you start with like the fast break drill?
Yeah.
So we were doing that and I was gassed. So I had to step out.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach came and talked to me. He's like, you're going to be okay one day. Like, and you know, but you know, it was tough. And then like eventually, you know, work through that phase similar to like with the math.
Mm-hmm.
And like start building that, and as you get comfortable, like you said, you get these accelerated returns where like all of a sudden you kind of have these mini breakthroughs or like, you know, aha moments.
Got you.
And you know, going from there, and I feel like those two experiences have really like helped me in terms of whether it's, you know, at Harvard, when I first get to Harvard, I set these goals of like, this is where I want my GPA to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I got my first test back, and it was like way higher than what I had, like the goal I set for myself. I'm like, wait, like I can do Harvard.
Yeah.
Because I got to Harvard, I'm like, okay, it'd be cool if I got like a B plus, maybe A minus average.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my first math test back, I got like a 97. I'm like, okay, like time to reset these goals. But it's like that same process of like, you know, being willing to go through that process of discovery to get to a point where you feel like you're comfortable and you're able to then get those accelerated returns and have something you can lean back on. And the same thing in the work world, you know, like, remember when I first started my job, I kept on thinking about like some of the workouts you have for basketball. And like when it was late nights, you know, some nights you're there at 12, 1, 2, 3, and you're like there by yourself. You just kind of have your music playing in your headphones and you're cranking on your keyboard. And, you know, I thought back to freshman year, fall, we're out on at the stadium at like 5 a.m., moon's still out.
Wow.
And we're running stadiums. I'm like, man, if I can do that,
yeah,
I can sit at a keyboard for 2 hours. You know what I mean?
I agree.
So, those are the type of things that, you know, I feel like from, you know, that foundation when you're young and building that confidence in yourself where it's like, oh, I'm good at something. And like, you know, this is how I got here. To like applying that to other things, so like basketball. And then, you know, when you get older, it's like, you know, there's a process to follow. And like, even when you're in the early stages where you're actually not good at something, you understand that like, there's a path to being good.
The process.
Yeah.
Trust it.
Trust the process.
Even though they beat
the Raptors.
Oh, the Raptors won.
The Raptors won.
Excuse
that.
Me.
Yeah. No, it's cool.
So let's bring it back to your basketball days.
Yeah.
I know you played in Canada. You
yeah.
were on the Canadian national team. But I want to talk more about your U.S. basketball past. So
okay.
you played at Montverde.
Yeah, I played at Montverde.
That's in Florida, correct?
Yeah, it's just outside Orlando.
Who was the coach of this team?
So, Kevin Boyle.
Kevin Boyle. The reason I know him, actually, is because I'm a big Kyrie fan. So, he actually coached at St. Patrick's.
Yeah,
he coached
yeah.
Kyrie there.
He
and then he went
Kyrie,
to then he went to Montverde to start
yeah.
Empire there.
Yeah.
On that team, you played with Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
D'Angelo Russell.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are two NBA All-Stars.
Yeah.
Did you know that they were this good?
Man, yeah, I knew they were really good. I remember a funny thing is we had a really good team. Like our whole team went D1 basically.
Oh wow.
Like the starting center at Florida State, this dude, I call him Big Chris. That's my boy. he like didn't play my senior
Shout out
year.
To Big Chris.
He didn't play my senior year and he was still just playing basketball, but he's 7'5".
Oh wow.
And he like was like we were a high school team and he's not getting minutes. So like that gives you like a sense of like, you know, how good our team was.
Yeah.
In terms of that. But we had, you know, we had Division I guards coming off the bench. Like, so we had a really stacked team. I had a concussion during the fall.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, you know, I was eager to help out the team however I could. I remember, I would bring a piece of paper to practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just watch practice. I would take stats. And like, of like the scrimmage drills or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember like, when we're playing in practice, you know who is like good. Like, D'Angelo's killing it. Ben's killing it. It's like, oh, yeah. But it's like, you're just going up and down.
Mm-hmm.
When I took these steps, I look at the end of practice, like, these guys are good.
Oh, they're dominating.
Yeah, it's like, you know, Ben would have, like, monstrous talent. Like, D'Angelo would have a monstrous stat line. It's like, these guys are super talented.
Yeah.
Because, like, the guys here are super talented. These guys, like, are, like, heroes.
Wow.
So it was like, you know, I thought that, you know, I could see that talent level. And then also just, like, when you know, when it was like crunch time in big games, those are the guys you look to, you know
they
what I
stepped
mean?
Up.
Yeah, I remember, you know, high school national tournament at the end of the year, you know, we're playing Huntington Prep. You know, you look to guys like Ben D'Angelo at the end of games, you know, D'Angelo was doing the ice in my veins thing.
He was doing that back then?
Yeah, I remember
oh,
the first
wow.
time I saw it. Yeah, he hit a couple free throws at the end of the game, hit the ice in my veins.
Wow.
I was like, that's pretty cool, man. Yeah, so
did you guys win the national championship?
Yeah, we won the national championship, baby.
Okay, so I assume you were getting recruited by a bunch of schools.
Yeah, I got recruited by a good amount of schools, yeah.
What made you choose Harvard?
Yeah, so what made me choose Harvard was my parents are Nigerian. No, I'm not. what made me choose Harvard was just the level of trust one I had in Coach Amaker.
Mm-hmm.
The direction the program was going in. And then, you know, it is Harvard. Like, you know, there's a video of me when I was 6 years old, like 6, 7 years old. And I'm at home, and my mom used to do these things where we, like, do, like, public speaking or whatever. So she'd, like, pick a topic, and we all have to talk.
Yeah.
She, like, gives us this phone, and we're supposed to talk about, like, our future, and we're supposed to use the phone as a prop. So I'm talking, and she's, like, in asking us questions, and, like an interview.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, what you want to be when you grow up? And I'm, like, I want to be the CEO or the manager of the Christopher Empire. Some, like, weird kid stuff, right?
Okay.
Like, I'm not really, I'm, like, 7 years old.
Oh.
Like, I'm young. My voice is high.
Yeah.
The shirt doesn't quite fit me.
Mm-hmm.
My head's too big for my neck. But, so I say that, and then she's, like, okay, before you become CEO of this company,
mm-hmm.
like, what school are you going to go to? I said, I'm going to go to Harvard, and I'm going to study law, I'm going to study business. I was about, like, 20 things. I'm, like, okay, like, slow down there.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's kind of the vision I had when I was a kid, because, you know, I knew I wanted to be the best, I knew Harvard was, like, the best.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, I'm 17 years old, I'm trying to make a decision on what school to go to, and I have the privilege of, like, having Harvard's coach, you know, come to Florida to come watch me practice, you know, meet with him at Harvard, get a tour of Harvard. I remember when I committed to Harvard, you know, it was like this huge like relief of like this is like a dream come true. I remember like
this is it.
Yeah, like I was in the hotel room on my official visit. I looked at my pops and I was just like, because my dad really wanted me to go to Harvard the whole time. And honestly, like at first I wasn't really trying to go to Harvard because I wasn't sure about the basketball experience. But you know, after speaking with Coach and seeing what the team was like and playing with the team, I felt really comfortable with that aspect of it.
Yeah.
So I was in the hotel room with my dad and my mom, and I'm just like, yeah, I think I'm going here next year.
Wow.
And I remember the smiles on their faces. It was like this, this moment, because they had sacrificed a lot for me to have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it all came to fruition.
Was that their choice as well?
Oh yeah, they both wanted Harvard really bad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, so that was a good moment.
So I was, after we decided that we were going to do this interview, I did a little bit of research, and I came across a video on YouTube titled Men of March. It's about your coach, Tommy Amaker.
Yeah.
And the athletic director at Harvard was asking why he wants to take this position at Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he said. He said, "Bob, my mother was a teacher. I actually really believe that I teach valuable lessons through the sport of basketball, and there's no place better to do it than a place that values education as much as Harvard." My question is, what lessons has he taught you through basketball?
Coach Amaker is the professor. He's like, mm-hmm. like a yoga. He's a major influence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke on our team. He's very quotable. Like, uh-huh. Before practice, he'll have like a quote of the day. We kind of poke fun at it, but at the end of the day, I remember my senior year, we were kind of going through a rough patch of the season,
mm-hmm.
and he gave us like an assignment to like write a story about like kind of how we wanted the season to go. And then, so I reached out to everyone on the team, I basically just asked them for like a quote from Coach Amaker, like a lesson from Coach Amaker. We compiled a book.
Oh, wow.
Like one quote for each person on the team, of just like a lesson Coach Amaker taught us, from like, stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Gotcha.
Or make your layups, which is something that like really sticks with me to this day. Like, how do you succeed in the workforce? Like, you make your layups. Like, when there's easy opportunities, like, for example, even in school, like, going to class is easy. Like, you don't need to be the smartest person in the world to go to class. You don't need to, be an astrophysicist. It doesn't cost any money. Like, if you go to class, your grades will be better than if you didn't go to class.
So like, that's a way.
That's easy, right? Or like at work, like check your work. Like, you might not be the fastest person, but you can be careful, right? Mm-hmm. So like after you do something, you print it out, you look at it and you review it. That's the layup.
Gotcha.
So like making those layups, that's like a lesson he taught me. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. It's amazing what we can accomplish when nobody cares who gets the credit. That's another thing he likes to impart on us. So like he has all these little quotables and lessons that he's taught us through basketball. And, but one that really resonates with me, and, it's a little bit outside of basketball, and, like, it kind of appears in a lot of the stuff I do outside of basketball, is this quote he likes, is like, do well and do good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea that, like, people impart on you. I touched on it a little bit in my graduation speech. The idea that, like, to be successful is to be super rich.
Yeah.
Or the idea of being successful is to own a lot of things, to have the best job, to be seen as the most famous, etc. Like all these individual things.
Yes.
And it's like, that's the idea of like, okay, but are you doing good? Like, what have you done for others?
Gotcha.
So the idea of like, yes, do well, provide for your family, be able to, do the things that you like to do for fun.
Mm-hmm.
But also like do good for others. Like you, especially, going to a university like Harvard, where we are blessed with these privileges, blessed with just privilege in general. Like there's a lot of things that I have access to just by means of attending that school that like other people don't have access to.
Mm-hmm.
And like understanding that that's a privilege, and doesn't mean that I'm smarter than anybody, doesn't mean I'm more talented. It's just like, I was more fortunate. Like I could have been born, like I grew up in a suburban area where, the school system was one thing, and resources that I had access to, resources a lot of people might not have access to in other places. I, when I needed help with my SAT, I was able to afford a tutor, like little things like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I'm a product of hard work, yes, my parents' work, yes, but also a privilege of circumstance, right? And just being able to understand that, and understand that my success isn't my success.
Gotcha.
And understanding that, it's my duty, after being given this privilege and being able to kind of win that lottery, to utilize that privilege to help others.
Gotcha.
And so, give people access to that.
So Coach Amerika wasn't just a coach, he was also a professor in a way.
Yeah, no. He does things like faculty dinner, like he'll bring in like Cornell West, Dr. Cornell West.
Yeah.
We had like a team dinner with him and he just talked, he like kind of lectured to us for an hour. And we just got to like pick his brain, ask him questions. Mm-hmm. You know, he organized an event at the Institute of Politics where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came and talked about, you know, some of the stuff he's encountered. You know, Dr. Harry Edwards, who helped organize the 1968 Olympic protests.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I got to Coach Emmerich, brought him to campus. We had discussions with him.
Wow.
I actually got close. He helped me actually with a lot of my No More Name stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's all stuff that, you know, doesn't even, like, not we're not on the court, you know.
Yeah.
And that's some of the stuff that I appreciate most from Coach Emmerich. He really formed me, helped me form as a man, not just a basketball.
So I remember we were talking about Chris Polanco before this interview.
Yeah.
Shout out to Chris. He just moved to LA.
Yeah.
I remember when he first connected us through email, he sent me a article that you had written for the Players Tribune,
yeah,
finding Michael Brown.
Yeah.
And there was a quote that stuck with me from there that I'm just going to read to you. It says, "I was a man, but also a kid. I was a kid, but also a threat." What do you mean by this?
Yeah, no, so I was just kind of touching on, to be a black, young black man, you know, in America, is to grow up knowing that, you know, Tamir Wright, right? He was 8 years old and, you know, he was had a toy gun. And, but they, when they see him, they don't see an 8 year old, they see a black man.
Mm-hmm.
So it's to be robbed of your youth and your innocence at a young age because of the color of your skin and because of the perceived threat. And it's to be seen as a threat in all circumstances until proven otherwise.
Okay.
So, you know, that's kind of how I, you know, when I had to acknowledge that in my existence as, you know, a 6'8", 230-pound black man in America,
mm-hmm,
that, you know, if an officer ever pulled me over and I, you know, moved the wrong way, it could be an issue.
Yeah.
Because they don't see a civilian, they see a threat. And, you know, just acknowledging that, you know, it shouldn't be that way, but, you know, I am viewed as a threat. And, you know, that in itself is an insight that is, you know, at once, you know, helpful because we have to navigate these spaces, but also, like, depressing because if you're an 8-year-old boy playing with a toy gun, you should kill.
I agree. So. Yeah. You talked about how you participated in the protest,
mm-hmm,
you and your teammate, I think you guys were coming home from practice,
yeah,
and you saw the protest going on,
yeah,
and you joined the protest, and then you laid on the...
Yeah, it was like there was a die-in, so everybody just laid on the street.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so you participated in that, and then you went on and you started No More Names.
Yeah, that was a while later. So the protest was freshman year,
mm-hmm,
and No More Names is my senior year.
Okay.
But what was the question?
What exactly is No More Names?
So what No More Names is, it's kind of like a grassroots effort to, one, spark discussion amongst young people. And, you know, particularly we've run events at Ivy League schools so far, and to just kind of leverage the privilege, like I said, as a weapon,
mm-hmm,
to help grant access to, you know, voices. So, like, one person we, you know, work a lot with is Emily Garner.
Mm-hmm.
So she's the daughter of Eric Garner.
Okay.
You know, I've gotten the privilege to kind of get to know her. And basically what we did was, you know, when the court case for Officer Pantaleo was coming up, you know, in the lead up to that, we had a bunch of events with her at different campuses where she came to Harvard, she spoke there, she came to Columbia, she spoke there, about, you know, her about her. And, you know, for her, it's just like, part of it is like a therapy for her, right? Just like talking,
yeah,
about this horrible thing that happened to her, and like a lot of things like you don't really think about, right? Like, for example, on Twitter, people share all these videos of these incidents, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you don't really think about the fact that, like, you know, if you lost your dad and your dad was choked to death on camera, you wouldn't want to, every time you go on Twitter, you're seeing a video of your dad.
No.
And that's like something people don't really think about a lot of times, but that's something she vocalized, right? And that's, you know, being able to give her that, you know, help give her a platform in some of these spaces that, you know, might not have otherwise given her a platform, just let her say her piece. And, you know, that's some of the work we've done, you know, so just like connecting with people who are on the ground and, you know, dealing with these different issues bringing into, you know, school campuses and, you know, building, kind of trying to build energy and movement around these issues amongst young people on these campuses. And, you know, I think as a generation, in particular, we grew up in kind of the Black Lives Matter era.
Yes.
Where, like, a lot of this stuff was, like, caught on camera. A lot of this stuff was, like, immediately shareable on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're seeing this stuff constantly. And, you know, we want to do something, and I feel like a lot of times we don't know what. So, like, trying to provide that, you know, for young people of color. So, like, one thing that was particularly, two moments that were particularly, like, important for me in doing this. So one was, I think both of them happened at Princeton campus. So one was, we had Vic Mensa's organization, Save Money, Save Life, come to Princeton's campus. Vic Mensa performed, a lot of energy around that. But his organization came to campus, and they gave a talk on a program called Street Medics that they run.
Okay.
Which basically, in Chicago, there's a lot of street violence. And, you know, what most people don't know, if you get shot, like, there's a large chance that you can bleed out before the paramedics arrive. So what they do is, you know, and it's terrible that, you know, that this is something that needs to happen, but they train these young kids to be, like, first responders and help them help stop the bleeding so that when paramedics arrive, they can, you know, have a chance to save people's lives.
Wow.
So we had that program, and they gave the presentation, walked students on campus through that program. And then, you know, what ended up happening was, you know, this summer I hear back from, you know, the program director, Londi Kisable, and she's like, yeah, we ended up getting an intern to the event because, like, the students didn't know we were doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
But once they found out, they were like, you know, there's one student who was particularly moved by the work they were doing and wanted to help out, and she ended up interning with them. So, like, being able to connect students with, like, I don't really know what to do with all this energy,
mm-hmm.
to, like, these are organizations that are doing the stuff, and, like, we're bringing them to your campus, like, connect, and, like, hopefully we can, like, find ways for you to help them out and to help that work get done.
Okay. And you plan on bringing this to different schools across the country?
Yeah, so that's what we're working on, you know. Whenever you have stuff like this, it's a challenge. So it's just, like, day by day, it's a process, and trusting the process and working on that. But, you know, I feel like different moments have been validating. So, like, you know, for example, we were talking about, like, youth activism at Princeton with a program called Bolt. So it's like these high school students who are, you know, marked as leaders. And this one little girl, she was talking about how she's frustrated within her school community because she doesn't feel like people are, you know, acting on these causes the way they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we spoke, and I was just telling her, and we were just basically talking about how, like, you know, you're never too young to have a voice and to get stuff done. And, like, age is honestly just an illusion made up by, like, grown-ups. So, like,
yeah, I agree.
I, like, you know, you can be 15 and you can organize a protest. You can be 15, you can, you know, change stuff in your school. You can be 15. If you want to get something, like, don't let your age be a detriment to what you want to accomplish. Especially, like, now in the age of the internet where, like, there's all this information you can get access to. Like,
mm-hmm.
So that's what I was telling her. And, you know, at the end of the session, she was just like, you know, like, thank you for that. Like, you really made me feel like difference. I was like, that really hit me. It was just,
yeah,
like, you know, I'm just out here talking to, you know, doing all this stuff, but that was like, you know, like, there's something here, and, like, you know, we gotta keep going forward with this.
That's awesome. So my dream, what God put on my heart, is I want to alter the education system in the world. What I feel is, though, I went through college, I got my degree,
mm-hmm.
in communication. I went to England, I did my master's degree,
mm-hmm.
international business. I feel as though I've learned more valuable life lessons through sports than I did through the education system.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel as though a lot of kids grow up and they have goals of making it to the league. They want to go play NBA basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They want to go play NFL. So they put all their effort into this, and when they don't make it there, they feel like they're assed out. They're like, what now?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's because in the moment when you're playing these sports, you don't know what you're learning while you're playing it because it's happening
mm-hmm.
so fast. So I want to have these kids taught what they're learning. You've already accomplished so much. You've gave a commencement speech at Harvard. You started
mm-hmm.
No More Names. What else is out there for you? What's your dream?
What's my dream? That's a great question. You know, I feel like I have a couple dreams on, like, a few different levels. But, you know, one dream of mine is the idea that, you know, kind of touches on what I spoke about earlier. The idea that I've been very privileged.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm my being here and all the accomplishments you listed are a matter of circumstance, not just a matter of... I don't think of myself as some extraordinarily gifted person. I think of myself as an extremely blessed person, you know, who has been blessed with some talents, but also has been blessed with, like, timing, luck, a lot of other things. You know what I mean? Like, I could have been born during an economic downturn, and that could have changed my life. You know, my dad could have lost his job at any time and changed my life. You know, so understanding that I have these privileges and that have been kind of given to me, right? You know, and I've been, how do I take those privileges of having a Harvard degree, of being the commencement speaker, of being given a voice, and how do I lend that to people who don't have those privileges?
Gotcha.
People who, you know, might be smarter than me, but don't have a Harvard degree, so no one's gonna listen. Yeah, or, you know, black people who are frustrated with certain things, but again, like, don't work in whatever industry, so people aren't gonna listen. It's like, I've been afforded, you know, we live in the kind of a society that's been, like, guided by, like, white supremacist ideologies is, like, the foundation of kind of American society. And, you know, the patriarchal nature of that as well. And that's kind of the system we live in. And that system, I have, like, certain markers or signals that system lends weight to.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking advantage of that stuff to, like, help those people who don't have those. So, like, one thing, for example, that I've tried to do is... in college, I helped run a tutoring company called Go Test Prep.
Okay.
And what we did was we tried to provide affordable tutoring for SAT classes to high school students of color, different basketball players I knew, because I knew there's a lot of, you know, super smart kids, honestly, or kids who are smart enough to get, you know, their grades in schools didn't really correlate to their test grades, and that's because, like, the SAT isn't a class. It's, like, it's a test that you have to study for.
Yeah.
And there's, like, a way to do well on the SAT, and, like, if you don't have access to tutoring, honestly, like, oftentimes you'll be kind of left behind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so take the privileges I was granted. So I was able to get a tutor. I was able to go to Harvard. And basically, we got a bunch of Harvard students to, like, help tutor these kids.
Gotcha.
At a price that was way lower than the market price. That was something, you know, of me taking the privileges I've been given.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, using that to help people out. And, you know, one of a couple of special moments for me is this kid, Tim Keeley, who I'm still good friends with to this day. You know, he got into Brown. We worked with him. And then, a friend of mine is at Cal Berkeley. So, you know, those are some of the things that we've been able to help, you know, like kids who otherwise wouldn't have had those opportunities because, not because they aren't smart enough, but just because, like, literally, like, they don't have those privileges that, like, a lot of other kids do. Like, they were able to get access to that. And so my dream, I guess, would be, you know, kind of democratizing access to different resources like that.
Gotcha.
That's kind of long-winded, but yeah.
No, that was perfect. Yeah. Thank you for that. Have you ever heard the term "use sports"? Don't let sports use you.
Yeah, no, I've heard that.
What does that mean to you?
Yeah, for me, it was always, you know, I guess I could ground in a story. So in sixth grade, when I first, like, really started seriously playing basketball, I wasn't good, but I was like, I wanted to be good, so I was, like, the only sixth grader on the team, on the, like, U14 team at the school. I was, like, super tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was, like, always a good student, but I was kind of slacking in school. So my teacher pulled me aside, and he was like, you can do both. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, okay, like, I understand you like basketball, but, like, you can be a good student and be good at basketball.
Gotcha.
And it's, like, the idea of... So that was, like, a foundational moment for me. But the idea of, like, basically, there's so much that basketball has to offer. So meeting new people, learning life skills and experiences, like, you know, stay ready so you don't have to get ready, make your layups,
mm-hmm.
all the way to building confidence in yourself that you can, you know, transfer to other situations. So, like, when you get to a tough time in life, you have to give a speech at graduation, you can think about, like, man, this is like making a free throw in front of a big crowd. This is, like, your big game, the fourth quarter. Like, I've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much you can get out of the game, but I feel like often people, you know, it can often be, there's a lot the game can take from you, right? Time. You can get people who are kind of leechers off of you who just want to be around you because of the fame they might get or because of the money they could get. And it's like, so there's ways the game can use you or your coaches can take up all your time. And it's like, there's ways that you can use the game. You know, for example, using basketball as a way to get access to that privilege by going to Harvard, mm-hmm. or using basketball as a way to start platforms like this mm-hmm. that can help connect with the youth. So like there's so much you can get out of the game, is just being cognizant of like the stuff that the game is giving to you.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So there's one more quote. I'm sorry for all these quotes.
Yeah.
So I was reading a book by, his name is Jonathan Fader. He's a sports psychologist. He worked mm-hmm. with the Mets and the Giants. He wrote a book called Life as Sport.
Yeah.
So this is the quote that I took from the book. It says, "If you can look at your life as a sport and yourself as an athlete at the center of this all-important game, you'll be able to easily and effectively achieve the results you desire." My question to you is, why should people look at life as a sport?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I think when you think about sport, oftentimes it can bring out the best of us, right, in us. And, you know, whether it's a team sport, individual sport, it's striving. There's a phrase I like, and it's me versus me.
Yeah.
And I feel like sport is one of those instances in which you're very much focused on self-improvement. And I feel like in our world, especially in our social media society, we're so focused on the external.
Yeah.
That we don't often focus on the internal. And I feel like sport is very much focused on getting at peace with your internal. Like, basketball game, like, you know, there's a guy guarding you, there's all that other stuff. But at the end of the day, like, when you time it, it's time to make the shot, it's you.
Mm-hmm.
It's you versus you. It's you making the shot. So, like, you know, in life, when you think about your career, you're pressuring yourself because X friend is doing this, Y friend is doing that, and you're not where you think you should be based on where they're at, but then if you take a basketball perspective to it, or even a track is a super interesting sport from that perspective, where it's like literally like
you
have your times and you're trying to beat your personal times and get better every time. And like, if you take that approach to your life, you'll be surprised where you end up, right? It's like
yes.
trusting in that process to focus on you and improving you, you'll be surprised what happens to the external. And I think if you view life in a way that you view sports that way, you can be really successful.
And you know there's parents out there that are holding their children out from sports, whether it be because of injury or what have you. What do you think that these parents are having their children miss out on?
Yeah, and you know, I'll start with the caveat that like I feel like every situation is different. It's like, you know, maybe some, like, you know, there's some situations where it'll be valid to kind of hold this kid out from sport. But, you know, I feel like sport has a lot that is a, sport is a very rich experience in which, you know, for me, particularly like team sports, where I got to really just meet a ton of people from different backgrounds, get to know different people. You're trying to figure, you know, life is all about like figuring where you fit in
yeah.
in this world. And like, on a basketball is kind of that same thing, right? You're on the court with five people. One guy's the big man, the other guy's the shooter, the other guy's the ball handler. Like, what am I? And it's like constantly figuring out where you fit in this world, things you can be confident about, things that are your weaknesses, improving your weaknesses. It's a process of self-discovery.
Yes.
And particularly as a young kid, you know, for me, growing up as a young, awkward, I was always the tallest in my class. I was like 6'5" when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
I'm like this gangly kid stumbling, tripping over my own shoelace all the time. And it's like, basketball was a formative experience in me, you know, not only discovering who I was in the basketball court, but discovering who I was as a man.
Yeah.
And I think those kind of experiences, the friends, my best friend to this day is my teammate from Harvard, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think sport has a lot to give you. And I think even, you know, I spoke a little bit about team sport, even in the individual sports I've tracked, like I said, it's a very me versus me mentality and being able to improve on yourself and focus on it, on self. Stuff like that. Again, the process of self-discovery. I think that's what sport is.
That was beautiful. Thank you for joining me today.
Appreciate you.
I wish you all the best success. If they want to reach out to you, if they want to follow No More Names, where can
yeah.
people find you?
So follow No More Names at _ No More Names, one word. And then, you know, follow me at Chris Eggie. So CHRISEGI 24.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and I will see you next time.